This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
Thanks for joining us once again here on the eHealth Radio Network. This is your host, Eric Michaels. eHealth Radio gives you the most current health information, news, and advice featuring some of the leading innovators in healthcare and wellness who are changing healthcare as we know it. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. Today on the program, we're speaking with Dr. Alicia Mavis, pediatric hepatologist at Duke University, where she cares for pediatric patients with liver disease. And Dr. Mavis, thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you with us and looking forward to being well informed as well per your expertise. So for starters, tell us, what is the prevalence of fatty liver disease in children and who should we be screening? Let's start there today.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So unfortunately, fatty liver disease is the most common cause of pediatric liver disease as a whole now. There's actually no studies that look at the incidence of fatty liver disease in children, but we know the prevalence of it parallels the increasing prevalence of obesity in our current society. We've even seen a 2.7-fold increase in obesity in kids since the 1980s. Of course, the prevalence can vary by the child's age, gender, race, and ethnicity, and even their BMI, and it really depends on which population you screen. So it's a lot different than how we look at it as an adult world. But the increased prevalence in children comes with certain risk factors, including diabetes, prediabetes or insulin resistance, obstructive sleep apnea, hypopituitarism, and we're seeing more in males and the more severe obese kids. It's always nice to throw some numbers when we're talking about prevalence, and we're seeing around, you know, just under 1% of fatty liver disease in kids that are ages 2 to 4 years old, which is extremely young. But it goes up to about 17% in teenagers that are 15 to 19 years of age, and even as high as 30 to 40% in children that are obese when you screen by ALT. And we'll kind of talk about screening in a little bit, but if you look at just prevalence based on race and ethnicity, you see a fourfold increase in Hispanic children ranging in age from 11 to 22, about a 10% prevalence in Asian children and about 8% in white, whereas African-American children, it's less than 2%. And so the prevalence is increasing over time, and it's concerning with it being such a common liver disease.
Yeah, certainly eye-opening information for sure, and thanks for some good information there to get things underway here today. Now, when screening a child for fatty liver disease, what are some of the tools used to evaluate for the disease, and how is the diagnosis of pediatric fatty liver disease made?
So screening is a little more difficult in pediatrics than it is on the adult side. It includes a combination of labs, imaging, including the FibroScan, and a clinical exam. So we kind of start with the basics and always look at labs first. ALT is a liver-specific lab that is commonly used for screening in pediatric liver disease. However, the ranges is important to know that most of the ALT ranges that we see on those lab results we get from our doctors are based on regional labs that determine population norms. And so these aren't pediatric-specific numbers. So we actually had a study that was done in kids 12 to 17 years of age with normal weight, normal metabolic, and no liver disease. And come to find out, a normal ALT in girls is 22 and a normal in boys is 26. This is a lot different than what you see on those lab results that come out as the normal range. And so it's important just to start with what is a normal ALT. But knowing that there's limitations with the ALT, this lab can fluctuate over time. It doesn't necessarily correlate with histology. And it can't differ between a more advanced stage of non-alcoholic steatohepatitis versus simple fat in the liver or non-alcoholic fatty liver. So that's kind of starting with the labs. We also look at some imaging. It's very common for us to get a liver ultrasound in kids. However, the ultrasound also, as great as it is being non-invasive, it doesn't differ between the different levels of fatty liver versus the more severe forms, and it doesn't tell us how much fat is in the liver with very much sensitivity. There are some newer imaging options, including FibroScan and MR elastography, that we're starting to use more. And there's even some recent studies that are showing that the efficacy of FibroScan in pediatric fatty liver disease is really pretty good, looking at fibrosis and the amount of fat in the liver. However, these are not available everywhere, and you have to hope your child can cooperate with it and lay still. And so this kind of limits the age group we can do that, because Under about five, it's really difficult to use it. Even 5 to 8 years of age can be tough just to get a kid to lay still enough for this, but we're making progress with that. From the screening point, we really do recommend screening in all children that are 9 to 11 years of age with a BMI greater than 95 or a BMI in the 85th to 94th percentile and additional risk factors, including insulin resistance, prediabetes or diabetes, dyslipidemia, sleep apnea, and or family history of NASH and NAFLD. We're even starting to think about earlier screening in kids with risk factors that include severe obesity or that family history or kids that have hypopituitarism. We can't forget though, even though I focus on the kids, it's always important to make sure we recommend screening for the parents and the siblings if they look like they have risk factors. So bottom line really is that ALT is not ideal, but it's our best way that we have for screening at this time. And so it's important that we look at the gender-specific norms of girls of 22 and boys of 26. And if it's elevated for more than 3 months or an ALT greater than 80, we really got to think about further evaluation for fatty liver disease. And if they're not that high, then we can look at kind of repeating every 2 to 3 years if the risk factors remain unchanged. So the screening is the biggest portion of all this. The diagnosis is a little more difficult. For diagnosing fatty liver disease in pediatrics, you've got to exclude other liver diseases. In the adult world, you just go for a liver biopsy right away, but a liver biopsy is invasive and not what we like to do in kids if we can avoid it. So we start by trying to exclude other causes of liver disease, including genetic, metabolic disorders, medications, dietary causes, and even infections. We use a combination of serum markers or labs, some scoring systems we have, the imaging and liver biopsy to try and really look at this. Unfortunately, there are going to be some kids that need a liver biopsy. It is invasive, but it can be extremely helpful in quantifying steatosis for us and helping us differentiate between that more severe form of non-alcoholic steatohepatitis versus plain fatty liver. There really are differences on the biopsy. There's even differences in pediatric fatty liver disease from adult fatty liver disease on the biopsy. So imaging for the diagnosis side is kind of hard. It's limited studies that can help us diagnose. It can be helpful for screening. We're starting to really use FibroScan as one of our modalities for screening, but it's still not in the realm for the diagnosis. So when it comes to diagnosis, it's really the only thing we can do is exclude liver biopsy and then, excuse other liver diseases and consider a liver biopsy for kids that are more at risk for NASH. We don't have any imaging recommendations at this time as part of the diagnostic workup. They're still part of the screening. So it really goes back to making sure we're screening everyone that we need to be screening.
Now, another question for you along these lines, what is the natural history of pediatric liver disease and how does this differ from adult fatty liver disease?
That's a hard one, but a great question. We actually have kind of natural history studies in the adult world, but we don't have those in the pediatric world. We have noticed that pediatric fatty liver disease can progress at a faster pace without intervention than adult fatty liver. There's very few studies that are looking at biopsies at two separate time points like the adult studies do, kind of like we talked about because the biopsy is invasive. But the few that we have, even though they're small studies, they show worsening fibrosis in just under 2 to 4 years, which is not a lot of time. And this is a lot faster than we see on the adult side. So there's a concern for an aggressive phenotype in pediatric fatty liver disease when you look at the kids from the adults. And there's even one study that looked at bariatric surgery in adolescents versus severely obese adults, and the adolescents had worsening disease. We do know there's increased mortality with pediatric fatty liver disease, but again, we don't have the good data to show us just how much increased risk it is. So the reality is that we don't have long-term data on pediatric NAFLD yet, so we're trying to extrapolate from the adult data, which is likely insufficient. If you think about it, when a kid becomes obese at a young age, at 3, 5, 8 years of age, they have a much longer lifetime exposure to obesity and the potential complications of obesity, including fatty liver disease. And even many of these kids are exposed in utero with a mom being overweight or having insulin resistance, which can cause some epigenetic changes, which again, these epigenetic changes can increase the risk of fatty liver disease before the child's even born. So we don't quite have the data for the natural history on pediatric fatty liver disease, but what we extrapolate from the adults, it's a very concerning that this fatty liver disease in pediatrics is more aggressive or progresses faster than what we see on the adult side.
Well, we certainly appreciate what you do in the space and for taking a moment to be with us here today. Some really helpful information so far today. We're speaking with Dr. Alicia Mavis, pediatric hepatologist at Duke University, where she cares for pediatric patients with liver disease here on eHealth Radio's Health News and Liver Health Channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Now, continuing on, what are the current recommendations for the treatment of pediatric fatty liver disease? Any information and details there would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, so now that we've screened for it, diagnosed it, how do we treat it? That's always the questions family have for me. Unfortunately, we don't have any specific medications. It's really the focus on lifestyle modifications to improve the diet, increase the physical activity, and try and improve overall lifestyle. And that's what's going to treat fatty liver in pediatrics. We encourage families to decrease the sugar sweetened beverages, even eliminate them from the home if we can. Moderate to vigorous exercise, 30 minutes to an hour every single day if possible. Limiting screen time to less than 2 hours a day, that's an extremely hard one. Many times we give the kids any type of screen to keep them occupied if we're trying to get some work done or do something around the house. But also focusing on a healthy, well-balanced diet. This sounds easy, but it's not. We do a lot of identification of families with poor resources or minimal resources, and healthy, balanced food is expensive. And so how do we kind of help them with that? Like I said, there's no current medications for fatty liver, but there are some new medications out in the diabetes world that we've noticed provide some good weight loss. So we're starting to evaluate these in kids with fatty liver disease and diabetes. So more details on that coming soon, hopefully. And then in the rare circumstance, bariatric surgery is still an option in those certain patients that have a BMI greater than 35. They don't have end-stage liver disease. They have just fatty liver disease and no other comorbidities. But this is one we try and avoid. So we really try and focus on lifestyle modifications and working with the family on where they are and how we can make those modifications.
It certainly makes sense, your response there. And are there other diseases associated with pediatric fatty liver disease that we should be aware of?
Yeah, so just like in the adult world, we can actually see cardiovascular disease, dyslipidemia or increased, cholesterol. We can also see increased blood pressure or hypertension, and as well as obstructive sleep apnea. So all of these, the dyslipidemia and the blood pressure are things that we're going to be treating like you would in any other population. But the one we see more in pediatrics than adult is obstructive sleep apnea. It affects more than 50% of kids with fatty liver disease. And it's associated with a more advanced form or the non-alcoholic steatohepatitis and advanced fibrosis independent of their body mass index and metabolic syndrome. And so we really need to be trying to identify kids that have the obstructive sleep apnea and try and treat that, as well as making sure we're regularly checking blood pressure on these kids, doing some regular screening for dyslipidemia and cardiovascular risk factors. We know that in the adult studies, cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of mortality in patients with fatty liver disease, and it's associated independent of the body mass index or their weight. And so the fact that we see early atherosclerosis in adolescents is concerning for this. So again, it comes down to screening these kids.
It really does. And again, Dr. Mavis, we thank you so much for the information provided here today. Most helpful, and for what you do at Duke University. If listeners wanted to get more information on the technology used to screen pediatric fatty liver disease and or any other information and resources, that would be greatly appreciated. Where should listeners visit online?
So each of the pediatric hospitals usually has a pediatric hepatology website. Ours at Duke does for sure. And so identifying us, going onto the Duke Children's Network and identifying the specific providers, or even just the term pediatric fatty liver disease, will get you a lot more information and try and give you more education on different things that we can be doing for screening and how to get a hold of people if you have concerns.
And Dr. Mavis, we thank you for those resources, and we'll apply these links within the show notes of this broadcast accordingly. Again, Dr. Mavis, all the best. Thanks for joining us here today on eHealth Radio.
Thank you very much.
And you're certainly more than welcome anytime. Again, we've been speaking with Dr. Alicia Mavis, pediatric hepatologist at Duke University, where she cares for pediatric patients with liver disease. And for all the details, visit Echosense.com. And again, this has been your host, Eric Michaels, and we do thank you for your continued support of the eHealth Radio Network. Join us again soon for another episode that will help further expand your knowledge on those things that are important to your health and wellness. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. And as always, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.